It was movie night. About a dozen of Zaid's siblings had come home, most of the ones who were local and unmarried, although Nadia, who had a husband, joined them since her husband was away. She brought her two young children. They gathered at Khalid's house. His television screen stretched across an entire wall, the other walls lined with shelves of DVDs or plastered with movie posters. He had a list of movie suggestions. He read it to the room, and the siblings who were closest argued loudly with his choices. But Zaid's mind was elsewhere. He sat in a chair in the back of the room, his eyes locked on nothingness as he replayed a conversation in his head.
"People are starting to talk,"
his older sister had said.
"Are you really sneaking off with Aisha unattended? You're already 16, Zaid. It's not appropriate to be alone with her, even if she's your teacher."
He'd argued that they weren't doing anything un-Islamic. His sister didn't care. She'd lectured him on propriety, on his reputation, on Aisha's reputation, which was even more fragile. She was a Quranic teacher and in medical school. She was expected to be a pillar of morality. Zaid let out an angry breath. Aisha was a pillar of morality, and he was in love with her. The argument over the movie grew more heated. One sister wanted an action movie, but another wanted a comedy. Khalid interjected, saying both choices were bad. One of the sisters squealed and threw a DVD box at him. Zaid had told his sister of his feelings for Aisha, but she had simply brushed him off.
"She's too old for you,"
his sister had said.
"When you're ready to be married, she'll be too old to have children. We'll find you a wife who's a better age."
Zaid ground his teeth together. He didn't want his family to find him a wife. He wanted Aisha. Khalid and his sisters were screaming at each other now. One of the other brothers angrily intervened. Several other siblings yelled at everyone for being too loud. The toddlers grew antsy and one of them started whining. Nadia picked up her child and shouted for everyone to stop. Zaid's fingers buried into the armrest of his chair. His family had no idea what he was going through. They didn't know about the terrible power God had given him and how it threatened to destroy his life. Aisha was the only one who knew. Without her, he would go mad. But they didn't care. Aisha was too old. Her family was working class. Their time together was inappropriate, even if his intentions were pure. She wasn't right for him. They didn't know him at all. A scream snapped Zaid out of his thoughts. One of his brothers had tackled another. They grappled on the floor as another brother tried to pull them apart. Sisters screamed and cried as the child in Nadia's arms started slapping at her flustered mother with chubby little fists. Zaid suddenly realized what he'd done. He fumbled in his pocket, desperate for his bottle of pills. He popped the top and angrily jammed a pill under his tongue. He prayed as it dissolved. The sedative hit his bloodstream, draining his anger away. Sleepiness tugged at the corners of his eyes. He blinked a few times and took a long breath. He dismissed the thoughts of his family and Aisha. His body had relaxed enough, at least at the moment, for him to stop caring. His brothers sheepishly ended their fight. The voices in the room quieted, turning apologetic. Khalid sighed and hugged his sister. Nadia's toddler calmed down, sniffling as she sucked her thumb. They decided on a movie the children would like. Khalid set up the DVD player and dimmed the lights. As everyone spread through the room, Khalid went to join Zaid in the back. Zaid slumped in his chair, chemical relaxation snaking through his veins. Khalid watched Zaid for a minute. He finally frowned and pushed on his remote. A menagerie of animals appeared on the screen.
"You're always so serious,"
Khalid muttered.
"What are you doing, sitting quietly in the back while we all try to kill each other? Didn't you have an opinion on the movie?"
Zaid licked his teeth. He shook his head. Khalid clicked his tongue.
"Sometimes I wonder about you. You need to learn to let loose, Zaid. Show us a little emotion so we know you're not dead."
Zaid blinked once, slowly. Then he stared at Khalid through blurry eyes. Somewhere on the floor, a toddler started to cry.
"I need a team. No more than four."
Aisei couldn't get any new information from Kiyoshi. He was going through the security checkpoints again. She opened her eyes as Nick barked his orders.
"A team? So it's time to save Kiyoshi?"
Daniel rushed back into the room, lugging a large duffel bag. Nick lifted it like it was weightless and unzipped it.
"We're gonna try,"
he said as he dumped the bag's contents on the table. Random gear spilled onto the tabletop. He pulled a heavy belt from the pile and wrapped it around his hips.
"Zaid,"
he ordered as he buckled the belt.
"You're driving."
Zaid slid a hand into his pocket. He pulled out a pair of keys without a word. Nick grabbed another belt contraption, this one with clear holsters, and buckled it around his shoulders. He flicked Hazel eyes to Aisei.
"And I want Aisei there."
Aisei froze. Before she could think of a response, Sachi spoke for her.
You want her to go on the rescue mission? Don't we need her to keep her attention on Kiyoshi?"
"Exactly. She'll lead us there."
"But she can do that from here. We'll keep in touch with our mobile phones."
Nick shook his head.
"Her directions were too vague last time. I needed to see landmarks in person. She can match them with whatever she sees through the bugs."
Nick grabbed a few knife-shaped sheaths and strapped them to his belts.
I'll keep her in the car the whole time, if I can. Zayed hasn't been in Japan long and his car's brand new. Cole won't be looking for it.
Sachi's forehead creased as he clenched his fists.
But that's still really dangerous.
So is she. You've never seen her when she's a full swarm, Sachi.
Sachi shrunk back. He bit his lip and looked away. Aise swallowed. She knew the church didn't have a full rescue plan worked out. They didn't know when or if they could locate the core building and breach its security. But they were out of time. They had to intercept Kiyoshi before Kor forced him to kill. It could come down to a fight, and Aise had to be there. It doesn't matter, she told herself. I have to do this for Kiyoshi. She repeated the lines in her head a few times. It helped her from deliberating on what sort of danger she was walking into. Emmy suddenly rushed over to Nick. She grabbed one of his huge arms with both hands.
You said you can bring four people. Let the fourth one be me.
Nick shook his head.
I need you here when we get back.
Emmy choked and pulled at Nick's arm.
Bring me! Please, Nick-san, I don't care how dangerous it is.
She started to shake, tears beating in her eyes.
If anyone has to risk her life for this mission, it should be me. He's my baby brother!
Nick angrily shook her off.
And you didn't tell us because you didn't want to compromise the mission,
he said coldly.
Don't compromise us now.
But...
Listen to me!
Nick grabbed Emmy by the shoulders.
I need you here for when we get back. You're the only one with a medical background, and I don't know what kind of shape he'll be in. They could be timing this mission so he's close to detoxing.
Emmy swallowed a whine and covered her mouth.
I can take care of him when we get back, and you might need medical attention there.
If Kor takes you out, we're up shit creek. You're staying here.
Nick released her and muttered something in English.
Only an idiot brings his medic to the front line.
Emmy tried to retort, but Daniel gently pulled her away.
We should start setting up a sick room. He's right, Emmy. You're needed here.
Aise closed her eyes and focused her attention on Kiyoshi. He was being marched back to the elevator. She flew her observation bug in behind them. Two floors up. They led him out onto another floor of the parking lot as lights blinked on around them. They opened up a small, locked area of the garage. Aise's perception lit up somewhere else. The bug on the car. Relief flooded through her, followed immediately by adrenaline. They're using the same car as last time, she called out to the room, so I can use the bug I left there. She heard Nick laugh without humor.
And we know about the new plates they put on it. Some good luck for once.
One guard took the cases holding Kiyoshi's sniper rifle and loaded them into the trunk. Another guard blindfolded Kiyoshi and pushed his head down, guiding him into the car. Aise flew an insect in behind them. A hand slapped her aside. Her insect went careening into the car door and crashed to the concrete. Aise felt a twinge of pain.
Ugh, what's with all the bugs lately?
She heard a guard grunt.
Do we need to spray this place?
Aise's heart pounded. She waited until the guard stepped into the car before zooming from the floor and into the car by their feet. The door slammed shut behind her. Aise let out the breath she'd held. I have to be more careful, she thought as she opened a human eye. They're starting to notice me. Nick had finished packing his gear and now helped Sachi shrug into a vest. Once it was on, Nick pulled the vest open and gestured to each item strapped inside.
That's pepper spray. Aise already has her own. That's a taser. I'll show you how to use it in the car. In case you get in a bind, this keychain lets off an alarm that's loud as hell.
Realization dawned on Aise. Sachi's eyes caught her own. He smiled weakly.
I'll feel better if I come, Aise. It's not right to let you do this alone.
Worry dropped Aise's stomach like an anchor. Now she was nervous, and she was a little surprised at how badly. I'm not alone, she said. I'll have Nick, and... Does Sachi really have to come?
Zayed and I are gonna be busy. Sachi can watch over you while your attention's with Kiyoshi.
He grabbed a large sheath and shoved it into Sachi's hands.
He can handle it.
Sachi unsheathed his weapon a few centimeters. A long, thick hunting knife with serrated edges caught the light. He blinked a few times, then quickly sheathed it again. Nick took the weapon from Sachi's hands and crammed it into the vest. He slapped Sachi on the back so hard that Sachi's glasses were knocked askew.
Ready to be a man?
Sachi laughed nervously. He pushed the frames back up his nose. Aise squeezed shut her eyes. For the first time, she was relieved to switch her attention anywhere but the church.
For a few seconds, Joe couldn't move. Fear rooted him to the ground beneath his feet. He couldn't think as his wide eyes locked on the men who rushed Kiseki. Joe barely registered Kato struggling in his grip. Joe's fingers lost their strength and Kato pulled free. Kato took the chance to rush toward the fray. That managed to snap Joe out of his daze. He leapt forward and grabbed Kato's arm before the slight boy got away.
Let go!
Kato whined, his voice strangely determined. He pulled at Joe's fingers.
Mine needs a...
Joe gritted his teeth and dug his fingers into Kato's jacket. He dragged Kato deeper into the safety of the alley. Joe pulled backward on Kato's arm, hard. Kato cried out as he was spun to face Joe. Joe growled. What the hell is wrong with you? He snarled. Are you trying to get yourself killed? Kato squirmed in a panic.
I have to get to the car,
he begged. The car those thugs just came in? They'll crack your head open, you fucking idiot. If they're just here for Byakko... Joe suddenly cut himself off. A thought struck him. He dug his fingers into Kato's arm again, this time as more of a warning. Do you know what's going on here, Kato? He asked lowly. Kato froze. He opened his mouth as beads of sweat rolled down his temples.
No, I swear I don't. I just...
Kato trailed off. He stopped fighting Joe's grip, although Joe could feel him trembling. Joe didn't buy it. He pulled Kato close enough that he could lean in threateningly. If you have anything to do with this, you'd better tell me this second, unless you want me to beat the shit out of you. Kato cringed back. A small whine escaped him. But he said nothing. Frustrated, Joe let Kato go. He didn't have time to try and communicate with the whimpering classmate. Find a phone and call 110, Joe ordered. And stay hidden here, unless you want to prove you're with these guys. Kato trembled and clenched his hands. Joe spun around and ran to the door connecting the bar and the alley. His heart thundering in his chest, he carefully turned the knob and opened the door a crack. He could hear yelling and pounding from under the floor. The small sliver of the bar he could see was trashed. A stool was knocked over, and glass and ceramic shards littered the floor. Not sensing any movement, Joe opened the door a little wider. He saw the end of someone's limp leg. Joe sucked in a breath and stuck his head past the door. It was Kenta. He was sprawled on the floor behind the bar, his shoulders and head propped awkwardly against the wall. His head was slumped away from Joe, but Joe could tell that the man was unconscious. Shit! Joe quickly crawled into Kiseki, keeping himself low and behind the bar. Kenta's phone lay in the shelves against the wall. Joe reached up to grab the receiver and bring it down to his level. He dialed 110 with shaking fingers. Joe waited the few seconds for the operator to pick up. He pushed the receiver close to his mouth and rattled off Kiseki's address.
Sir?
The phone operator asked.
What's the emergency?
Joe didn't have time. Armed burglary, he offered, before sliding the receiver onto a lower shelf. He left it off the hook so the cops could trace their location. Joe ignored the tiny, muffled questions echoing from the receiver as he crawled over to Kenta. Joe couldn't tell how badly the man was hurt. Kenta-san? He whispered as he reached out. He gripped Kenta's shoulder and gently shook him. Kenta's head flopped awkwardly toward Joe, his eyes open and unblinking. Joe's heart seized. He fell back on his tailbone, covering his blurted cry with a hand. What the fuck? Someone screamed from downstairs, but Joe barely heard it over the blood rushing in his ears. From that position, Joe could see Kenta's head was lolling in an unnatural position. It looked like his neck was broken. There was a thin, murky film over Kenta's pupils. He was dead. He was dead. Joe tried not to puke as he dug his fingers into his own face. He swallowed hard behind his palm and grabbed at the phone. The operator was still trying to talk to him.
Please answer the phone,
came the even voice from the other end of the line. I'm still here, but I can't talk. Just send the cops. They already murdered the owner. The operator mumbled some sort of affirmative.
Units are on their way. Leave the phone off the hook and get to safety.
Amidst the thumping and yelling downstairs, something creaked much closer to the surface. Joe whipped his head around as a man in a black ski mask ran up the stairs from the basement. Shit! Joe scrambled backward toward the door, but the man noticed him. He ran at Joe, flipping out a switchblade. Fuck! Joe blurted as he struggled to his feet. He reached desperately along the shelves for a weapon. His hand closed on a whiskey bottle. He smashed it against the bar and brandished the broken, dripping end at the charging thug. The man halted a few steps from Joe. He snarled and kicked outward, his foot landing squarely on Joe's chest. The force knocked Joe against the shelves, sending pain streaming up his back as bottles toppled to smash on the floor. Struggling to breathe, he strengthened the grip on his weapon before it slid out of his hand. The thug grabbed Joe's collar. Joe slashed his broken bottle across the man's arm.
Shit!
The man cursed as he retracted his arm. A dark stain spread across the black fabric around his elbow. Joe didn't waste any time. He kicked the man in the groin as hard as he could. The man choked and doubled over. Joe grabbed the back of the man's shirt and rammed him face first into the shelves behind the bar. The man crumpled to the floor, gurgling as his switchblade fell from his fingers. Joe kicked the weapon away. The stretch of floor beside them was littered with small bits of broken glass. Joe heaved the huge man onto his back against the floor. The thug cursed and arched away from the shards. Joe stepped down on the man's chest, forcing him against the glass. The man screamed. Who the hell are you? Joe demanded. His voice shook, but he couldn't steady it. The man spluttered obscenities and struggled under Joe's leg.
Say to you, we're here to fuck up Byakko!
Joe stopped. The man below him looked much too old and much too tough to be with Seryu. Joe's eyes flew to the man's waist. Sure enough, the end of a blue bandana peeked out from behind his right hip. That was the genuine symbol for Seryu. Joe frantically looked to the man's slashed sleeve. The inside of the man's forearm was streaked with blood, but there were no dark veins lacing across the skin. The man wasn't on pitch. "I don't believe you," was all Joe could think to say. He stepped down again and the man cried out in pain. Joe took the opportunity to reach down and pull off the ski mask. The man was Japanese, and at least in his mid-20s. Joe didn't recognize him.
"Get off me!"
the man shouted.
"If you hand over Miki, we won't kill you little shits!"
Miki? Not Joe? Not Bon, the actual leader of Byakko? What the hell is going on? The man managed to grab Joe's leg. He heaved Joe off him, which sent Joe stumbling to keep his balance. The man pushed himself to a crouch, leaving thin ribbons of blood dripping from his cut back. Joe kicked the man in the chin. The man's head snapped to the side, and he let out a soft groan as he crumbled forward to the floor. In a strange panic, Joe dropped to his knees and checked to see if the man was still breathing. His chest moved, albeit shallowly. Joe kicked some of the glass shards away before shoving the unconscious body against the wall. He glanced back at Kenta, whose sagging head now faced the other direction. Joe swallowed hard. Joe heard footsteps pound through the front door. His heart in his throat, he grabbed the man's switchblade and jumped to his feet. Seiya and a pair of Byakko members screeched to a halt. Seiya's wide eyes met Joe's. Joe choked out a breath. He lowered the knife.
"Joe!"
Seiya shouted as he ran behind the bar.
"What the hell is happening?"
Joe didn't know how to explain. They said they're Seiryu, but I mean... Seiya's eyes fell on the unconscious thug behind the bar. Joe saw him deliberate on the blue bandana. Abruptly, Seiya's gaze jerked to Kenta.
"Kenta-san!"
he shouted. Seiya lunged forward, but Joe grabbed him by the shoulders. He pushed Seiya back. He's dead, Seiya. Seiya froze. The two other Byakko members leaned over the bar, cursing quietly.
"They killed Kenta-san? When the hell did Seiryu get those guys?"
Seiya stared at Joe a moment, his eyes wide with shock. Then he scowled darkly, his brow furrowing low.
"Fuck this!"
Seiya whipped his head around. He ran a few steps away and picked up an abandoned baseball bat. He gripped it with both hands. Joe's stomach dropped. "Wait," he called, his voice breaking slightly. "These guys are too serious to be Seiryu, Seiya. I called the cops." Seiya gave the bat a test swing, silencing Joe. He rested the bat against his shoulder, anger twisting his usually relaxed features.
"I don't care who they are. I'm not waiting for the cops to bail us out. Byakko can handle its own shit."
One of the other boys pumped a fist and grunted his agreement. The other one snatched the switchblade from Joe and ran for the back room. Joe felt fear clench every muscle in his body. He grabbed Seiya by the arm before he could reach the stairs. Joe dug in his fingertips. "Don't," he pleaded. "This is out of your league. They threaten to kill everyone if we don't hand over Miki."
"Is Miki down there?"
Joe searched his memory. "I think so," he said after a second. Seiya shook himself free.
"Then I'm definitely not waiting for the cops. I'd rather die than let those fuckers take our boss."
"Seiya!" Seiya suddenly smiled. The words died in Joe's throat. Seiya slapped Joe on the shoulder as he flashed his crooked teeth.
"Joe, I love Byakko. And sometimes you gotta fight for what you love, right?"
Joe didn't know what to say. Seiya just whooped and ran down the stairs, his orange head disappearing into the brawl below. Joe's stomach twisted into knots. He growled in frustration and turned toward the front door. He hadn't thought much of it, but he'd been unconsciously planning to leave before the police arrived. He changed his mind. He ran to the door, determined to at least guide them when they showed up. He looked down the street. There were no police officers yet, but the navy blue car was still parked a few buildings down. Kato was behind it, fiddling near the license plate. Joe's fear and anger roiled in his stomach. His suspicions of Kato lit the powder keg inside him.
"Kato! What the fuck are you doing?"
Kato jerked back from the car, his terrified eyes flicking up. The car trunk popped open a few centimeters, and then flew up on its hinges as a foot kicked it from inside. Joe's blood turned to ice. A hand reached out from the trunk and grabbed Kato by the jacket. Kato's head lolled back as he crumpled to the ground.
"What the—"
Feet pounded up the stairs. Joe turned to see another masked thug climbing up from the basement. He held a mobile phone against his ear. Joe's resolve hardened. He grabbed the nearby stool and charged at the man. The man cursed and barely dove out of Joe's lunge.
"You little shit!"
He regained his balance quickly and spun back at Joe. He closed his free fist and rammed it into Joe's kidney. The pain resonated through Joe's body, paralyzing him for a moment. The man punched Joe directly in his exposed stomach. The breath whooshed out of Joe's throat, along with a splatter of blood. Joe collapsed to the floor, curling around his stomach and struggling to breathe. The man muttered something. His shoes shifted in Joe's low vision.
"Sorry. No, just a straggler. What were you saying?"
The man was talking into his mobile phone. Joe thanked the phone for possibly saving his life.
"We found Miki, but he's not talking. We can't tell if he's lying or really doesn't know anything."
Joe coughed up blood and tried to regain his breath. His eyes flew over the floor around him, searching desperately for a weapon. All he saw was the toppled stool, and that was out of reach.
I guess. But how many can we kill before the public starts getting suspicious?
Terror seared through Joe's veins. He clenched his trembling fists, gearing himself for one last desperate lunge at the man standing over him. Which never came. The man suddenly cried out in surprise and shifted his feet toward the door.
Oh shit! How did he get out?
Something large shot through the room. Joe looked up just in time to see a stranger with no ski mask slam into Joe's attacker with the force of a battering ram. The two men smashed into a wall while the mobile phone skidded across the floor. Joe watched, dumbfounded, as the new arrival grabbed the masked man's head and jammed it against the wall. The masked thug cursed and fought against the hand gripping his jaw. The new guy's fists moved in a blur. He punched the masked man half a dozen times in the gut before taking a few steps back and delivering a roundhouse kick to his head. Joe's attacker slid to the floor, unconscious. The new guy picked up the mobile phone from the floor and put it to his ear. The phone emitted a few blurry words before abruptly cutting itself off. The man angrily slammed it down on the bar. He turned to Joe. Joe swallowed. Now that they were face to face, Joe could see that the guy was mixed race. He looked partially Japanese, but there was definitely foreign blood in there. He was tall and heavily muscled, dressed in a white t-shirt and what looked like badly mangled track pants. His clothes were torn and streaked with blood. Old blood was caked on any exposed skin, including down one cheek to disappear in some scruffy facial hair. He was barefoot. Whoever he was, he definitely didn't fit in with the men who had swarmed Kiseki. The man growled. Before Joe could react, the man reached down and grabbed the front of Joe's shirt. Joe croaked as the man lifted him so high that Joe's feet dangled over the floor.
Shorty!
The man barked. Joe choked and struggled against the man's grip. The fist was iron. He shook Joe until Joe's teeth rattled. He started rambling off words in a foreign language. Joe grabbed the man's arm. Is that English? He managed to think as his mind spun. Joe couldn't focus long enough to remember any English he'd learned in school. The man shook him again. I don't speak English! Joe cried out in Japanese, desperate to get the man to stop. The man scowled. He paused for a moment, mouthing something silently.
Where?
He said at last in a very thick accent.
Where is Shorty?
Joe kicked his dangling feet.
Who's Shorty?
The man grew angrier. He started rattling off something in English again. Joe recognized one or two words, but nothing that made sense. Some of the words sounded like proper names. One or two were even familiar.
Nick,
the man said at last.
Nick Marshall.
Joe froze. The man seemed to notice Joe's expression change because he grew more insistent.
Nick,
he said again. He paused before switching to Japanese.
Nick is friend.
What? Joe didn't know how to take that. Was the man a friend of Nick's, or was he asking if Joe was? Was it an accusation? Nick himself had said there was a bounty on his head. Desperate for more information, Joe's eyes trailed over the man. He stopped at the man's collar. It had been stretched beyond its elastic and torn in several places. It sagged low over his left clavicle, exposing a small tattoo. A cross. Joe spluttered and gripped the man's fist. The church, he said in Japanese, then repeated the word in English. He knew that one. He pointed to the tattoo. Church, Nick! The man's expression shifted to recognition. Joe started rambling all the related English he could remember. Christian! Jesus! Priest! He stopped, struggling to remember the name Sachi had told him over the phone.
Daniel? Priest Daniel?
The man dropped Joe. Joe fell so quickly that his knees buckled. The man grabbed Joe's forearm and helped him stand. To Joe's surprise, the man smiled brightly. He clapped Joe on the back.
Priest Daniel Azmek,
he confirmed.
Friend.
He's with those church guys. Relief flooded Joe so suddenly that his legs turned to jelly. The man's grip on him was all that kept him upright.
Shorty,
the man repeated from earlier.
Where's Shorty?
Shorty sounded like a Japanese name. I don't know who Shorty is, Joe said in Japanese. But yeah, I guess I'm friends with those church guys. Who are you? How did you get here? The man stared at Joe dumbly. Joe tried to formulate a related sentence in English, but a horrible scream from downstairs cut him off. It echoed throughout the entire building. Joe's blood ran cold. It sounded like Miki.
We found Miki, but he's not talking.
Joe's heart pounded. He looked at the stairwell that led down into the basement. The panel had been torn off its hinges, leaving the once hidden stairs open to the top floor. The crashing of bodies and screams of men echoed from below. It gaped at Joe like a monster's smiling mouth. Like a gateway to hell.
I'd rather die than let those fuckers take our boss.
Saya's voice echoed in his head. Joe still saw the crooked smile before Saya had jumped into that gaping hole. Joe felt the sweat drip down his back. Joe didn't hold any delusions about himself. He was terrified. The thought of going down into that massacre made fear throb in the marrow of his bones. After a lifetime of robbing people and doing everything possible to avoid punishment, he realized, for the first time, that he wasn't just scared of getting caught. He wasn't just scared of getting hurt. He was scared of any situation where he didn't think he could win. Joe was a coward. Joe swallowed hard. Shakily, he pulled back from the man's grip so he could stand under his own strength. Joe lifted the stool from the floor. A few of the legs were loose, so he snapped them free. He dropped everything but the two wooden posts and looked up at the man. "I'm Joe," Joe said quietly. He touched his chest to clarify. "Joe," he repeated. The man seemed to understand. He nodded and splayed a hand over his own chest.
"Adam."
Joe took a breath, then gestured to the stairs. He held out one of the posts. "Help," Joe croaked in English. "Please." The man raised his eyebrows. Joe held his own post to his chest and shook the second at Adam. "Help," Joe repeated, his voice cracking. "Please? Friends." The man stared at the post for a moment. Finally, he nodded at Joe and accepted the makeshift weapon.
"Help,"
he repeated, gripping the post with purpose.
"Help,"
he said as he pointed down the stairs. Joe turned to the basement. Bile swirled in his stomach, threatening to make him sick. He gathered every last shred of courage he could find in his heart. A large hand suddenly ruffled his hair. Joe looked up in surprise.
"Okay,"
Adam said in the most international word of all. He gave a small, determined smile.
"Joe, okay."
Joe clenched his jaw. He wished he could believe it.